Jordan Hayden.
Now we love movies. It is time for the movie news, and Andy McCarroll joins me now. Andy, we've said often on the programme that Dwayne Johnson is the hardest working man in Hollywood. Sometimes I think it's worth him saying no. And one film that he's been hoping to get off the ground. Now, we were all led to believe it was going to be a remake of Big Trouble in Little China, but things seem to have changed in that regard. What's going on?
Yeah, it's looking now like Big Trouble in Little China won't be a remake. It's going to be an extension of that universe, where it's going to kind of be a sort of sequel of sorts, but very much set in the same thing. For me, this feels like kind of damage control. I feel like the backlash was so great against The Rock playing the Kurt Russell character, Jack Burton, that they've come out with this statement as well, saying, oh, no, there's only one Jack Burton, there's only one man that could ever play him. And for me, I think they've kind of seen the reaction to that, and I reckon this is going to be Kurt Russell. He'll be making more than a small appearance in this one.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it might even go the way of a two-hander, which would be great. I think to see more Kurt Russell up on the big screen is always very welcome. But at the same time, Andy, Big Trouble in Little China, it is a bit of a cult film. Like, it wasn't a massive hit when it came out, and there's a lot of people absolutely love the film, but do you think really there's an appetite for it though?
I think it's kind of similar in the way of Jumanji, that it's like, it's not a massive film. Like, Jumanji wouldn't imagine being in anyone's top 10, but it is a very kind of passionate fan base for that, and they're the people that are going to like make the most noise. You've seen with the kind of what happened with the Ghostbusters remake sequel, whatever that was. Now, that was a terrible film as well, so that didn't help. But I think once the kind of the public perception is this is not a good film, that, you know, the people who wouldn't have been Big Trouble in Little China fans would kind of avoid it as well. You said there about playing it as a two-hander. I think Kurt Russell and The Rock, I think that would be quite a cool little two-handed double act to play, very much like, you know, Kurt Russell did with Tango and Cash. And if we're more Tango and Cash, more Big Trouble in Little China, the better.
Absolutely. And I think The Rock is at his best when he is playing off somebody. Now, granted, you may argue that, like, Kevin Hart is in a bit of an endurance test at times. But if you, like, take Rampage, like, he was just bland in that because he didn't have any really strong supporting cast around him. But anyway, Big Trouble in Little China Part 2 is on the way. Now, more casting news, Andy. Top Gun 2, they're currently shooting that at the moment, and it seems like they're parachuting in new actors all the time, because a few weeks ago, Miles Teller was announced that he was joining the cast, and he was going to play the son of Anthony Edwards' character, Goose, from the original film. So at least you've got that sort of synergy between the old and the new. Granted, Tom Cruise is obviously going to be there, but this could be a kind of a real, almost surrogate father feeling to the premise to Top Gun 2. But other big names have joined, Andy. Who are they?
Yeah, we've got Jennifer Connelly, who's going to be playing a bar, who owns the nearby Navy Bar. So I assume she's going to be the love interest for Tom Cruise at some point. Two names as well, John Hamm from Mad Men, and Ed Harris as well, who's, you know, remember being the bad guy in The Rock, most people remember him as. They seem to be getting some really, really interesting people in this. Now, it's strange because we spoke a couple of weeks ago on filming and already begun. They already started shooting the film. So to get, like, you know, four big actors like that kind of after the fact, there must be kind of something there in the script that made, you know, like, Ed Harris and John Hamm don't just do anything. So I'm very curious to see what direction or what tone this film is going to be. Saying that now, they both could be, you know, volleyball coaches for all I know in the film, but I'm very interested now in this film in a way that I wasn't a couple of weeks ago before those names were announced.
Imagine Ed Harris as a volleyball coach. you could definitely do that. I've seen it all now. Matt Smith, probably best known for playing Doctor Who. Now, some may argue because obviously he played Prince Philip in The Crown and did a really sterling job there. But it looks like he is going to be working with J.J. Abrams, Andy.
Yeah, they announced that the Star Wars cast last week, of course, which included Billy Dee Williams and had Carrie Fisher on the casting list. We're kind of led to believe this was the final cast list. But now Matt Smith has been put in, and, you know, by all accounts, they said it's a very prominent role in it. Very curious to see what side of the fence he ends up on. He kind of has that, you know, tweener look where I wouldn't be surprised to see him, you know, on the side of good or on the side of evil. So, again, the more of the coming out of the Star Wars film, it just seems, you know, very intriguing what they're doing with that. They seem to have one foot in the old and one foot in the new, especially with the backlash from The Last Jedi now. They seem to be going into, you know, full fan service role, probably one of the most popular Doctor Who's as well. So be curious to see what side he ends up on, whether he's a rebel or part of the Empire.
And they've done another rewrite to a degree where they have expanded the character of Lando for the new film as well, and given Chewbacca a lot more screen time, because that was something that a lot of people, there was a litany of things that certain people hated about The Last Jedi, and the fact that there wasn't enough Chewbacca really irked a lot of people. And I think as well, one thing from The Force Awakens, which J.J. Abrams wishes he could go back and change, is that there's a scene toward the end of The Force Awakens where Rey's character hugs Carrie Fisher's Princess Leia, or Lord Ortega now, and just off the back of what happened to Han Solo, and won't get into it for those that still haven't seen The Force Awakens, but a lot felt that Leia should have made a beeline for Chewbacca as opposed to Rey, and J.J. Abrams realised that since the film went into cinemas, went, oh yeah, totally, I made a mistake there. They should have embraced. So I still, that's probably still niggling away with them, hence why he wants to put in more Chewbacca. Anyway, I've gone off on a tangent, Andy, to bring
not like you at all.
Yeah, to bring things back. Now, a film franchise that looks like it's going to be resurrected is Sherlock Holmes. Robert Downey Jr., he's been spouting about the fact that he's been doing a bit of training and getting ready to play Holmes again. Is there any credibility to this at all, Andy, or is he just putting the feelers out?
No, it looks like it's going ahead. Jude Law has come out as well. He was doing the kind of the press tour for Fantastic Beasts, where he plays Dumbledore, and he said the story is kind of locked in. What's going to happen is that it's been, the real time is going to have passed, so it's been years since they've actually seen each other, kind of similar to how they played it in the TV show. And Jude Law said that's the reason he's kind of signed on. He's very excited to see this. Like, it's not just going to be a buddy team up. There's going to be real conflict between the two of them that they need to resolve. By all accounts, this seems to be a go. Like, these two films were hugely successful. Like, they both made over $500 million. It was kind of the unsung franchise that, you know, you didn't realize made as much money as it did. And I think Guy Ritchie as well, off the back of a couple of bad films for him, I think he's more than happy to jump back into the director's chair for something that, you know, feels like an easy swing for home base.
Well, the thing is, he had been a bit of a bad run, and then Sherlock Holmes came along, and that reignited his career of this Guy Ritchie now. And kind of things have gone that way again, where I think the sooner he could call action on a third Sherlock Holmes film, it might give his career a bit of a boost. I do not have high hopes for his live-action version of Aladdin starring Will Smith. It sounds painful. Guy Ritchie directed a Disney movie. Never did I think I'd see the day.
And you have six more King Arthur films to come.
Well, do you know what? That's definitely not going to happen. There's no way. There's no way. Andy, thank you so much for that. That's Andy McCarroll there with this week's movie news. And Andy will be back a little later on, as we'll be taking a look at some of the best ever Irish actors, along with some of the new rising stars. Until then, Andy McCarroll, thanks a mil.
Thanks a lot, Gordon.
We love movies with Gordon Hayden.
Now, We Love Movies, we are going to turn our attention to one of the films playing in cinemas this weekend. The Happy Time Murders stars Melissa McCarthy. And for anyone that's seen the trailer or seen the poster, she is surrounded by Muppets. This is very much a more adult take on the Muppets that you would have seen. It's written and directed by Brian Henson, who is Jim Henson's son. And this is very much a murder mystery, buddy cop style film. Very much aimed at adults. You won't be bringing the kids along to see it. Before we talk to Chris Wasser about the film's plot and what he thought of it, here's a little bit from The Happy Time Murders.
You two are the most decorated offices in this department. What do you see?
Looks like a robbery gone wrong to me.
This wasn't a robbery, this was a hit.
Welcome!
Someone out there is killing puppets.
Hey, handsome.
You looking for some rotten cotton?
I'm a woman. That's okay.
Yeah, that's even better.
Got a good time for you.
Little bit there from The Happy Time Murders starring Melissa McCarthy. Chris Wasser from The Herald joins me now. Chris, this has been a film that Brian Henson, Jim Henson's son, has been hoping to make for a long time. Now, it didn't necessarily set the box office alight last weekend when it was released in the States. $10 million in its opening weekend. But then again, it is more adult fare, so that might have restricted the amount of people that went along to see it. So the marriage of this sort of adult humour with the Muppets, it's a strange one, but they've crafted it around a detective story. What is the plot?
The plot is, let's just say it doesn't hide the fact that it might be ripping off Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So the plot involves a private investigator named Phil Phillips, and Phil is a puppet. He's, you know, voiced and controlled by American puppeteer Bill Beretta. And he lives in Los Angeles where puppets and humans coexist. But the puppets in this world are regarded as second-class citizens, and they're treated as such because, you know, the film is trying to say something about racism it might have found a neat way to further explore this team had, you know, it been handled by grown-ups, but we'll get to the verdict later on. But anyway, Phil used to be a detective. Something bad happened. He lost his badge, and now bad things are happening again. The stars of a classic puppet TV show that his brother was actually a star of, they're all being killed off one by one. And for reasons that, you know, are far too complicated to get into, Phil is forced to reunite with his former partner, Detective Connie Edwards. That's Melissa McCarthy. So the two of them have to work out who is the Happy Time Gang murderer.
Rightio. Now, when I saw Melissa McCarthy's name attached to it, like, you know, like, people can, she's kind of a bit of a Marmite type figure, Melissa McCarthy. And I think she's been churning out the same type of character for too long, you know, stuff like The Boss and Tammy being cases in point. But with this, she seems to be a bit more of a likable presence. She's not really hamming it up too much because, really, if she was to go all out, it would really take away from the ensemble that's around her with all the puppets and the Muppets or whatever. So, The trailer for the first one that got released, the Red Band trailer, Chris, they really wanted to show you just how adult this film is.
Yeah.
But then that could be quite tiresome if that's the one joke that they kind of try to keep spinning. So what was, in terms of the style, the tone, is it like that throughout?
It very much is. While I was watching it, I was thinking, I haven't seen anything like this. This, you know, the foul and furry antics, courtesy of all the of a gang of puppets, since I saw the Broadway and West End musical Avenue Q a few years ago. I actually saw that musical twice, and basically, it's this, you know, really naughty satirical riff on Sesame Street, and it's puppets behaving in ways you've would never believe they would. You know, it's quite depraved, quite diabolical at times, but it's very funny. You know, the difference there is that that was armed with a proper story. You know, the story came first and then the sex jokes came second. And it worked. But I think the problem with this film is that, first of all, the puppet creations, the actual stars, the puppets we're dealing with here, courtesy of the Henson Enterprise, because, you know, the Happy Time Murders was made by the late Jim Sloan Bryan, they are deeply unpleasant and staggeringly obnoxious characters. And they're just without purpose. They're without charm. There's no proper story here. The story, as I said, is just a complete ripoff of Roger Rabbit. And all of the characters, including the human ones, are just entirely useless.
Nice.
And I just think it's weird. I mean, for a start, like, we might as well just call it that. The Happy Time Murders is probably the worst film of the year. But I think it's actually worse and almost an insult to, you know, any of us that have invested time in Melissa McCarthy's career, because, as you said, you know, she is a bit of a Marmite performer. But I do think, you know, there is genuine talent there. There is genuine charm. Like, she, you know, when she's good, she's very good. But I don't know why she signed on for this film when there's no good jokes. You know, it's devoid of intelligence and charm and ingenuity. It's just crass the whole way through it. And, you know, I might sound like one thing, you know, I might sound as if I'm suggesting that there isn't a market for, you know, dirty puppet films, you know, taking, you know, what is like a children's entertainment piece and turning into this, like, you know, subversive adult film. There is. That could work just fine. You know, it's worked with countless other animations. It's worked before with puppets. It worked for Avenue Q, which I mentioned. But you have to have a bit of imagination. Mm. And you can't be lazy about it. And it can't just be, you know, depressing, dark, dark humor without some sort of, you know, there has to be a touch of lightness there as well. There has to be a good story. And there really isn't here.
God, Chris, you know, I did have a feeling that this would be a divisive film, but I wasn't expecting it to be such a poor film at that. Again, the fact that you've got such an obnoxious character throughout, you need to have some likability in there to make this work. If you were to try and compare it to anything, I know you were saying Who Framed Roger Rabbit, but in terms of the gags, the humour element, is there anything that comes close to?
Well, some comparisons have been made to, was it Team America or World Police from the South Park lads? Some comparisons have been made to, because there are sex scenes in this film that I will never be able to unsee. And, you know, I'll, you know, keep it PG, but, you know, let's just say there's silly string involved and they just go on forever, which is another weird thing as well, that this film is barely 90 minutes long. But it actually feels a lot longer just because, you know, it doesn't work on any level whatsoever. But there is that whole Team America World Police thing in that let's push things as far as we can with these characters. You know, let's make the characters do things that people wouldn't expect, you know, with marionettes or puppets or whatever it is you're working with. And again, that would be fine if there was some sort of story working around this. But it's just miserable to look at. Like, the actual puppets are quite horrible. And it's not even done very well. It's quite ineffective, the way the puppets communicate with the humans. It looks a little cheap. It's horrible to listen to because, as I said, the material just isn't funny. And it has this really annoying, tacky score. It's quite strange. And I, again, with Melissa McCarthy, you know, I like her. I'm just wondering why she keeps making films like this. And I just think that there is actually a scene about 20 minutes in when Melissa McCarthy's character is talking to Phil at their car, and they're giving each other a hard time, they're slagging each other, that's what they do for the entire film. And I kind of got during the scene that I cracked that she has just realized what a huge mistake she has made. Oh. And you can see it in her eyes, and you know that she knows that this film is just up to no good whatsoever. So you can see her heart start to break, and mine did as well, because I just was so sad watching this film. It actually killed a little part of me. I just died on the inside.
Oh,
that
no.
There is no redeemable qualities whatsoever.
I had heard Brian Henson mention this in an article years ago, that this would be the dream project for him because it was so different to anything that his father would have made, and it was really going to take the Muppets in a different direction. And how I know his father tried to change things up in the past, with the likes of Labyrinth and the Dark Crystal, and how his father's heart was broken because of especially the response to the Dark Crystal, and how he wanted to try and do something different. But then again, we had a darker version of the Muppets, a TV series they tried to do. Was it last year, and it bombed? I think after a few episodes they pulled it because it just was not working. So how someone thought, well, look, an adult version of the Muppets has not worked on television. It's not going to work on film. But anyway, Chris, you said this is the worst film for you. So let's just put that into context out of 10. How bad are we going to rate the Happy Time Murders?
It's pretty bad. It's kind of irredeemably awful. The fact that it ended, you know, we'll give it 1 point. I can't give it any more than 1 out of 10. It ruined my day, Gordon. And I cannot get over how much of a mess it is.
And you know, the awful thing is, Chris, I'm nearly intrigued to watch it now just to see how bad it is.
That's actually a funny thing about it, in that, like, halfway through I was even thinking, this film seems to be going out of its way to get worse. And maybe there's just this big secret that everyone's in on, thinking, we're actually making a terrible film, we're well aware of this, but 20 years from now, everyone's going to champion this as, like, the best bad film of, you know, the 21st century. I don't know if that's the case. Maybe that's thinking of it too highly. Maybe that's thinking about it more than anyone even involved in a thought about it. But it's, please don't go and see it.
Oh, there we go. Listen, you've heard. Imagine putting that in the poster. Please do not go and see this. Chris Wasser, thank you so much. Chris is going to be back in part two of We Love Movies, as we'll be taking a look at Searching and Yardie, which is the directorial debut of Idris Elba. Plus, we'll also be taking a look at some of the greatest Irish actors ever. That's all to come very shortly on We Love Movies.